Welcome to the sixth edition of Vox Populi. In this episode, we discuss questions of epistemology. Epistemology is the study of knowledge and how we know. Religion has always put forward blind obedience and faith as its own epistemology, and we atheists don't really like that. Believers also like to invoke faith as their excuse and use lack of faith as an argument against atheists. Let's see what our team had to say on these issues. Our first question is, some say that there are no necessary limits on human knowledge, while others say that the human brain may be incapable of grasping all natural laws. Which side do you agree with, and why?
Just a forewarning to you listeners out there, I'm a physicist, so I may have a bit of bias going into this one. Of course the human brain is capable of grasping natural laws, that much is certain. But let me just actually explain what a natural law is for those of you who aren't quite sure. A natural law is not, first of all, is absolutely not an equation or a mathematical model or any of this stuff that you might find in a physics classroom. It's absolutely not that. A natural law is something much like a law imposed by the government that civilians must, in theory, abide by or be punished. The universe must abide by a natural law. Okay, so a good example is the law of energy conservation. Now, if I have some energy, I can't ever get rid of it. That's the law of energy conservation. No matter how much energy you have, you'll always have the exact same amount. I can do anything I want to it. You can convert it into all sorts of things like heat and work and light and all this stuff, but you can never get rid of it. And that's a law of nature. But on to the question whether or not we can understand all natural laws, I think it begs two very, very important questions. First, it assumes that there is a closed set of natural laws. For instance, take the counting numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to infinity. Now we can understand the number 1, and the number 2, and the number 3, and the number 4, and keep going, all the way up to a number that you pick. Maybe it's 10 million, maybe it's 25 trillion, or maybe it's a Google. But you can't understand all of them because there's infinitely many of them. And natural laws may be the same way. Now, given any particular natural law or any particular finite number, I would say you can understand it, so I would say that we can understand natural laws. But secondly, this question assumes that our natural laws and the universe are all accessible by empirical study, right? Because in order for the brain to be able to comprehend something, our senses are sight and touch, and you know, we need to be able to feel it somehow in the first place. And could our brain understand laws which are inaccessible to us? Of course not, because they're inaccessible, we can't ever get to them. But I should like to think if it were accessible, you know, maybe our brain could understand it, but I don't think it's really a legitimate question to ask, so I won't give an answer, personally. In short, I guess I would say that we certainly can and do understand the natural laws that we do know of, and that we could understand another natural law if it were posed to us. I don't see any theoretical limits on human knowledge, except the available amount of time, brain capacity, and, like I was talking about earlier, accessibility in practice.
The human brain is capable of grasping all information perceived by it through the senses and abstracted by it through abstract reasoning, although this certainly does not include all information. Thus, there are necessary limits to human knowledge, which in a specific individual case are the limits of one's particular knowledge. Those concepts of which one remains unaware must necessarily limit one's ability to grasp concepts related to that which one does not know. This does not mean, however, that, at least on that count alone, one cannot know all there is to know. In other words, there is not a limit to human knowledge simply because human knowledge is limited. However, considering that the brain is a product of evolution and that it continues to evolve, it is reasonable to presume that it is incapable of grasping and retaining all potential knowledge in its current evolutionary state. This, of course, further presumes that knowledge is finite or that there is a limit to reach. I see no reason to take a leap, given that knowledge is largely a matter of abstracting from experience. Experience continues until we die, and we have no reason to believe that humans will become extinct. Taken together, this precludes access to all available knowledge.
I don't think we can ever know everything, and this is not because of the physiological limitations of the human brain. It is more likely the impossibility of knowing everything there is to know. The human mind is well adapted to continuous learning, and that is one of the obvious traits that has led to our dominance of this planet. It is more likely that our downfall will be physical limitations. Short lifespans, fragile bodies, disease, and the need for food, water, and oxygen are the determining factors in how far we go. It may sound cold, but it's looking more to me all the time like we are a stepping stone to the dominance of artificial intelligence in this universe. There are fewer weaknesses and many more strengths to artificial intelligence. Adaptable and maintainable hardware bodies that house an exponentially expanding intelligence are far superior to anything we could do, including enhancing our bodies and minds with technology. Interestingly, if this theory proves correct in time, then humans will essentially have all the necessary requirements that make our gods so popular in the here and now. We will be considered gods ourselves and secure our place in the history of the universe. And by the way, don't get me wrong, I think we will potentially be around for a long time, and we haven't even begun to fill our potential. I am optimistic that the best of humanity is still to come, and that someday the struggle of every individual will be minimized. I just believe there is a definite limit to how close we come to perfection, and that there will probably be an end to our lifespan as a species. This is not a good or bad thing. Everything has a life cycle, including our universe, and God.
Do you have faith about anything? Do you have hope about anything? If so, what? If not, why not? Is there a difference?
Let me just pull up a definition here from Merriam-Webster. Okay. Faith. Belief and trust in and loyalty to God, or belief in the traditional doctrines of a religion. Okay, that one's out. Let me try the next one here. Firm belief in something for which there is no proof. And belief means conviction of the truth of some statement. Okay, so let me get that straight. You have firm conviction of the truth of some statement for which there is no proof. Well, that's pretty silly. Anyone who does that must be an idiot, because quite clearly by the definition, there's no proof of it being true. So why you would be convinced that it's true, I don't know, and there's nothing to convince you. Okay, let's check out hope here. To cherish a desire with anticipation, or to expect with confidence. Well, I don't see a problem with these. I mean, certainly I desire and anticipate things, some more than others. I guess I might say that I cherish some of them. And of course I expect with confidence that, for example, the sun will rise tomorrow. So, yeah, from a strict semantic point of view, I guess I'll give a score of 0 to faith, or maybe minus 10 or something, and 1 or 2 to hope. Although, I have to say I'd give quite a few more points to empiricism and science and, you know, the real search for truth.
If by faith you mean belief in something without reason, then I would hope my answer is no. I might slip from time to time, like, you know, with old habits, but since I try to avoid irrational thinking, I like to think that I avoid faith as I've defined it here. About hope, well, yeah, I have it. There are things that I want and want to have happen, and because I can't predict the future, I'm left with a hope that what I want to happen will happen. I would not want to live in a world where I did not have hope, or where I did not believe that possible futures might exist. And I don't think that's irrational. I think that's just how our brains operate. So what sort of things do I have hope about? Well, off the top of my head, I would say that I have hope that I will be happy in the future, that I will continue to love my job, that I will continue to be physically and mentally capable of learning new things all the time, that my choices in life won't prevent me from learning or being happy, that I'll look back on my life at a ripe old age, another hope, and see a life well lived, etc.
The terms faith and hope are so general and misleading. They've also been beaten into the ground by the religious people who use the terms in reference to their gods. Anymore, they are buzzwords that have become indicators of ignorance to me. It is the default position of any religious person once pressed to the limits of their reasoning faculties. That is the main difference between someone who fears the unknown and someone who attacks the unknown with the critical mind. Those who cannot function without answers to seemingly unknowable and important questions must have something to fall back on to be able to cope with the fear of the unknown and death. There is also the vast majority of people who really don't care or assume present church authorities to be correct or grounded in reason and truth. I find the terms hope and faith unnecessary. I suppose I have hope and faith that the world will be here tomorrow, that the sun won't explode for a few more billion years, and that the odds of a catastrophic event claiming the world are remote. When it comes down to it, odds are the only thing I really have faith in. Mathematics have verifiable proofs and can predict anything with enough knowledge of interacting variables. There really isn't much difference between hope and faith to me. They are about as useful as prayer to me. They mostly entail passive wishing, while whatever it is one may desire slips out of reach. Perhaps it wouldn't be so bad if people hoped for the best but prepared for the worst. That really is the problem, though. Most consider it all they can do to hope, wish, have faith, or pray for what they want. Perhaps that is really all they are capable of.
I find that most of the confusion, on whatever subject you like, is caused by sloppy use of language. If a word means more than one thing, which they often do, it is critically important to straighten out the meanings and make clear which one you're talking about. Faith is a clear and urgent case of this, as I discuss in my book, Natural Atheism. The question asks about faith and hope. They are most clearly not the same thing. One could have faith that another bad hurricane will hit America without hoping that it will happen. But let's look more closely at the concept of faith, which I think is synonymous with belief. That is, to have faith in something is the same as to believe in that thing. Now, we use faith-belief in three very different ways. First, I might say that I have faith in or believe in my wife. What I'm saying there is that I trust her. If she says she will pick me up at the airport, I'm confident that she will. Second, I might say that I have faith in or believe in democracy or love. What I'm saying there is that I value them. I think democracy or love is a good thing, and that we could use more of them. Third, I might say that I have faith in or believe in UFOs or gremlins or gods. What I'm saying there is that I think those things are real. Notice that my faith belief in my wife, or democracy or love, does not say anything about their reality. In fact, it presupposes their reality, since it would be silly, even meaningless, to trust or value something that is not real. Of course, any particular case of faith belief can combine two or more of these senses of the word. I would assume that people who have faith in God not only think that their God is real, but put some trust in him, her, it, them, and value him, her, it, them. And of course, I cannot trust or value my wife without presuming that she is real. However, when we are sloppy and do not distinguish between these meanings, or about the truth claims inherent in some of them, we are asking for confusion. So, faith belief can mean a reality claim, that is, X is real, a confidence statement, or a value statement. Then what does faith belief mean as a reality claim? It means that someone takes some proposition, like God exists, as true, but without sufficient evidence for it, or even in the face of contradictory evidence. In other words, if I were to say, I have faith belief that the moon is made of green cheese, your only proper response would be to say that I'm wrong. Humans have been on the moon, and they did not find green cheese. I might still insist that I have faith belief in it. You should then say, why do you believe or have faith in that? My only response can be, well, I just do, or some authority told me, or I had a personal experience insight into the cheesiness of the moon. You should respond, that is inadequate for holding that position. And I would have to retreat to the assertion that I have faith belief in it anyhow. Now, why would anyone accept as true something that is patently and demonstrably false, or in something that one has no evidence for? The answer is, you shouldn't. It is foolish to make a reality claim without facts in reality. Therefore, in the sense of reality claims, I have no faith or belief whatsoever, and neither should you. I have some knowledge, and I have some speculation, and I have some tentative conclusion, but I have no faith. So, one of the three senses of faith, which I argue is the real sense of faith, can and must be dismissed. What about trust and value? I think you will agree that it would be stupid of me to trust my wife to pick me up at the airport if, 1, she's always forgotten or refused to pick me up before, or 2, she does not exist. In other words, if I said to you, I have faith that my wife will pick me up, although she has always failed, refused before, you would say that I am being reckless. What's the basis of that faith belief? There's no evidence to support it, and I may be sitting in the airport alone for a long time. And if I said, I have faith that my wife will pick me up, but I'm a bachelor or a widower, you would think I was either joking or insane. It is a false and ungrounded faith. Finally, if I said that I value democracy or love or gravity, despite the fact that they had always done me wrong, that democracy has always led to bad results, or love always hurts me, or gravity always makes me fall down, you would rightly say that I was being foolish. Of course, valuing does not always recognize or follow reason, so one can value what one wants. But to value something that betrays you is quite nuts. And if I said I valued Blork, but Blork does not exist, you would again claim that I'm joking or crazy. So, here's my recommendation for faith belief. Let us speak more clearly and coherently. When we mean trust confidence, let's say trust confidence. If I think I can trust my wife at the airport, I can say I trust my wife, instead of I have faith in my wife. And when we mean value, let's say value. If I value democracy, I can say I value democracy, instead of I have faith in democracy. That only leaves reality claims, and unfounded and demonstrably false ones at that, when we say and mean faith belief. And since no one wants to make an unfounded or false claim, faith belief goes away completely, and good riddance to it.
Why are people so willing to say, it's just faith and you have to accept it, when their beliefs are challenged? Do you think they really believe truth is personal, or are they rationalizing?
Let's be honest here. Faith is comfortable as hell. It's a warm blanket that insulates you from the slings and arrows of rigorous, rational thought. Of course people are going to run to faith when the going gets tough. I don't think people really believe that truth is personal. They just don't want to be bothered enough to think about it. Faith is belief without evidence or proof. And faith is also believing despite evidence or proof to the contrary. Faith means you have to turn your rational mind off, and there's just no other way to put it. But what about me? Is it possible for an atheist to have faith? Well, I certainly wouldn't. No belief that I hold is independent of personally observed evidence or secondhand reports of evidence which are consistent with my own observations. If someone told me that they'd seen a bird in their garden, I'd have no problem. I see birds all the time, and I've observed them in gardens, too. But if someone told me that a bird had talked to them about gravitational theory, you can bet I'd hold a skeptical opinion until that fact was verified by personal observation. I'd be willing to accept a talking bird, sure, but only after sufficient evidence was made available to satisfy the extraordinary nature of the claim. Well, maybe I don't have faith, but don't I even hope? Not really. Hope is the desire for events to occur whose certainty is unknown. There's a very thin line between hoping for something to happen and asking for something to happen. And who the hell am I going to ask? I mean, sure, there are things that I'd like to have happen. I'd like to have a new car delivered to my house today. But do I hope that something like that will happen? I'd have to say no. It's much more productive to recognize that if I want to fulfill that value, I need money. And to get money, I need to work in my job and save up enough money and then buy a new car for myself. So I don't have any need for hope. Well, maybe I don't have hope, but don't I even have trust? Well, sure, but only when trust is merited by the evidence. I can use inductive reasoning to trust certain facts as warranted by past evidence. Do I trust that the sun will rise tomorrow morning? Well, I know that the sun has risen every day I've been alive, let's say about 10,000 times. Do I think that the sun will rise tomorrow? Well, there's a chance that it won't, of course, but I'm 99.99% sure that it will, based on my past experience. Now, I wonder what would happen if Christians applied the same standard of trust to their religion. How many times does God answer their prayers in the affirmative versus how many times an apple does so? I'd hypothesize that both would be around 50%. So, either God works in mysterious ways, or he's no more potent than an apple. Statistics is a real bitch for religion. So yeah, faith is comfortable and easy, sure, but it's also a very terrible way to look at the world. Do yourself a favor and chuck it in the trash today.
I think people want to be comfortable. I think people could basically care less about the truth. They care about personal, immediate, quote-unquote, truths, but not about having an objective view of reality. People who say, just have faith, don't really know what they're saying. They're advocating an abdication of reason, in which case, having faith in one thing is just as good and therefore bad and meaningless as having faith in anything else. And it's really depressing to hear people say this, but I do get that occasionally. And when I do, I try not to anger them because, well, mostly because they're not in a rational state of mind from which to draw logical inferences. But also because their irrational beliefs about faith are so ingrained that even if they could be in a rational state of mind, like, you know, if they could have two brains at once, which I know technically you do, but that's another show. Those ingrained beliefs would form an impenetrable wall that nobody could get around. To get around it, you'd have to cheat death, and then you'd have to prove that it can't be cheated. Because people who have that sort of deep rational faith have it because they think there's something out there beyond the grave, which is a grave thought in itself, and I would love to snap everybody out of it entirely.
Saying it's just faith and you have to accept it is the sign of a passive existence. It is blindly accepting things that happen to you. It's not challenging anything, and many times it's a sign of perceived superiority. If one is serious about believing the acceptance of faith in God is what life boils down to, then they are deluded. Along with this delusion is the uncritical belief that he or she is right. How much thought or how long it took to reach this conclusion varies, but it's obvious it is not enough. This reminds me of Bertrand Russell's wonderful quote, "The whole problem with the world is that fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves, but wiser people so full of doubts." It's not the strength of one's convictions that I abhor. It's the methods employed and the lack of reasoning involved in conveying those convictions. It's insulting on many levels for one with the philosophical and scientific understanding of a fifth grader to tell you they are certain that they are right and that you are evil or stupid or both for not believing what they see as obvious. It's even more insulting that the individuals brave and smart enough to challenge this vast lack of common sense are marginalized and even persecuted for trying to help humanity. It's truly a formidable task ahead of us to show people why it is simply not enough to rely on faith. Saying God did it is simply not good enough anymore.
Where does the popular distrust of science come from? Is it a problem, and if so, how can it be solved?
I don't really think that there is a popular distrust of science. I mean, sure, idiots don't accept that the universe is 13.7 billion years old, but what do they know? I mean, honestly, they're not in any position to form an educated opinion on the topic, and quite frankly, we'd all do wise to not even bother listening to what the hell they have to say. However, there is a popular misconception in most fields in science, and I think it probably stems from two sources, namely lack of interest and lack of ability, because if someone's not interested in a topic, but they have to talk about it for whatever reason, a presentation or something, they probably won't get the message right since they don't really give a damn. On the other hand, someone really interested in a topic might still get it wrong simply because the topic is difficult. There's lots of conceptually easy scientific fields, but a lot of the extremely interesting ones are also extremely tough, and you can't blame the average person for misunderstanding it and often missing the point entirely. I do wish that there was more of an interest in science, but that's probably a topic for a whole show itself right there.
Ignorance is the main problem. Active efforts to subvert science in favor of a god is also a major problem. Confusion, pseudosciences, and superstitious traditions also help perpetuate the distrust of the scientific method. The speed at which scientific and technological advances take place can be overwhelming as well. It is simply easier and less stressful to take the experts' words for it. The problem comes in trying to decide which experts are correct. The priest has all the answers. The biologist, physicist, and psychologist doesn't. Nor do they offer answers in easy-to-understand language. Nor does everything they represent chime with how we perceive things to actually be. If we can just get to the point where there is no longer an overwhelming amount of people trying to actively undermine everything the scientific community has done for us, then distrust of science will be less of an issue. By the way, there should always be a little distrust or skepticism involved in any pursuit. That's the beauty of science. Ideas and theories are confirmed or denied through trial and error. Science is a competitive proving ground that benefits all. This is the one thing religion can never have. The only proving ground of religion is on the battlefield. Nonconformity will be religion's undoing.
I'm not a scientist, and therefore I'm not immersed in scientific fields, unless you mean computer science, where scientists might have to deal with non-scientists criticizing their work, but I can say that from being a big science fan and knowing that I became a science fan mostly after deconverting from my former religion, that most people who criticize science just don't understand and maybe don't want to understand what science means. Science is about the study of the natural world, and it comes with methods and tools for doing this. Science is people studying life, basically, and that's about as trustworthy as you can get. In fact, in a sense, it's more trustworthy than anything could be, because what else can you study but reality? You can study irrationality, you can study imagination, but ultimately you have to reference back to things that you know. That's what science studies. The only way to make people trust science is probably to educate them. And part of that means that you also have to re-educate them about what it means to live rationally in a natural world.
I want to say that people just don't trust what they don't understand. But you know, that's not the case with religious people. Religions are defined by theological irrationalities, somewhat euphemistically called mysteries, by the faithful. And I think that's really the essential difference between religion and science. Faith. Religion forces you to prioritize faith in your acceptance of their worldview, but science does not. No scientist I've ever seen has ever given a presentation without evidence and then concluded the talk by telling the audience, "Well, this may be hard to understand, but just accept it because I say so." Now, admittedly, the average priest or preacher wouldn't claim his own say-so, but would instead point to the authority of God. But really, that's worse. Not only are they just substituting their own say-so for God's say-so, but they're also assuming that God said so on the priest's say-so. Truly mind-bending. Scientists aren't like that. We'll form our hypotheses, conduct experiments, and then collect all the data together and present it to each other and to the world. And sure, we'll defend our conclusions, but ultimately we know that some conclusions are going to be hard to believe. So we press the evidence over and over again. We repeat the experiments over and over again. We invite others to repeat our experiments in their own laboratories. Because for scientists, the conclusions we make aren't important. It's the conclusions that are correct that are important. And the only way to show that conclusions are correct is to submit them to others for criticism. I think this kind of contributes to the public distrust, this lack of understanding of the scientific process. On the one hand, the public receives reports of scientific conclusions, usually from just one study that the media announces as a huge advance. Either the cancer gene has been discovered, or the heart attack gene has been discovered, or some such thing. Or it may be that one day celery is bad for you, and then the next day, celery is good for you. It's this kind of dichotomous thinking that really distorts public perception of science. Unfortunately, it's this same kind of thinking that makes religious acceptance that much easier, which is why I think acceptance of religion often goes hand in hand with the rejection of science.
Our team was Robert Dawson, Jake Doling, David Eller, Edward Grieve, and Zachary Moore. An archive of this feature is available on hellboundalley.com/voxpopuli. If you would like to join the team, submit comments, or suggest new questions, email us at alley@hellboundalley.com. Thank you, everyone, for their great work, and we'll be back in 2 weeks for more insightful answers, this time on the topic of religious arguments. This was Vox Populi, the voices of atheism.